Don't touch anything.
It's the greatest find yet. Nothing compares to it.
But it's definitely something you should hear.
This is The Real Deal with Larry Lawton.
Welcome to The Real Deal with me, Larry Lawton, and I got Nick as the producer, of course, and I have a special guest in-house today. I have Dr. Simon Vinarsky, who's from Ukraine, and we're going to do a whole update on the Ukraine-Russia war because we're frankly pissed that I don't know anything going on in there, and this man does. Before I get started, please check us out on all our social platforms. Check my book out, Gangster Redemption Cookbook, next week. Check out the cigars, of course. The Crooked Diamond goes crazy. Everybody loves them. It's Christmas time. We're going to have a couple codes going up and stuff of that nature. So we got a few things going on. This show is right here for Thanksgiving. It's going up very quickly here. And I have Dr. Simon Vinarsky. Thanks for coming on, Simon. You're a good friend, and you know that.
Thank you.
Simon is really a top-notch doctor, but besides that, he really cares. He's from Ukraine. Is your wife from Ukraine, too?
Yes. We both grew up in the Soviet Union, but the part of Soviet Union we grew up is Ukraine and now is an independent country since 1991. But when we grew up there, we grew up as a part of former Soviet Union, which ceased to exist around 1992.
Soviet Union, I thought it was in the 80s that the wall came down.
Wall in Berlin came down in 1986?
89
or 1989, I believe.
Okay.
89, if I'm not mistaken. But the Soviet Union ceased to exist about 1992. That's where I made my way to America.
Is that when you came here?
Yes. One of the reasons why my family was able to get the visa granted is by the powers of Mr. Gorbachev, who embraced some changes in the former communist and socialist regime. And if you remember the term perestroika was this term in the 80s where, remember Gorbachev?
Oh, yeah.
With the birthmark.
Yeah.
He is really the
Mikhail
Gorbachev. He is the reason why we sitting and talking right now, because for the longest time, former Soviet Union was the closed country. And the reason why my family couldn't immigrate to United States is because on my mom's side, my maternal grandfather was a patriot. He was fighting in the World War II. He was a partisan, but he was also a member of a communist party, as a lot of people in Soviet Union were. Rather entry-level, low-level. But because of that fact, where all of my Jewish relatives immigrated to Israel and United States, where the wave of immigration came in the late 70s and early 80s, and I was about 6 years old at that time, our visa was turned out because of my mom's father, who was a communist.
It belongs to a communist party.
So after that, we waited about almost 14 additional years. So when the opportunity finally presented itself, where as a result of the relatively modern politics of Mikhail Gorbachev, we were granted a visa, and the second opportunity presented itself. Here I was in America, you know, living my new life.
Did you
just slide your mic to the edge?
Sure.
Yeah, to the edge. There you go.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Did you, Simon, did you become... Were you a doctor in Ukraine, or were you a doctor here?
So Ukraine, as a lot of countries, for example, in Great Britain and India and other countries, and a lot of European medical system have a slightly different system. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but if you are a really good student in a high school, and I was a relatively good student with good grades, I was given an opportunity to be admitted straight to medical school at the tender age of 16 and a half. Granted, yes.
Wow. I know you're a prodigy in a lot of things. I know that, from piano to a lot of things.
Well, trust me, I may have been a prodigy in some things, but emotionally, I was completely immature and for a while was chasing wrong things in medical school. But the system, instead of going 4 years of college, pre-med, and 4 years of medical school, it's a six-year program. So once you get in from high school, you finish your pre-med, and then you go to medical school. But it's a six-year program. So when the opportunity presented to go to the United States, I actually had to interrupt my medical school in Ukraine and came to the States. Once I got my visa, my green card, and everything, and I knew I could travel and come back at any time, I simply came back to Ukraine and finished my medical academy in 1997. After that,
26 years ago.
Yeah, I was a graduate of Dnipropetrovsk State Medical Academy. Try to pronounce that. A wonderful medical school in the big city of Dnipro on the Dnipro River, which is now a very contested part of the battlefield with Russia. And once I came here to the United States, I was very fortunate to be accepted to SUBTOP residency and fellowship program in New York.
What hospital?
I work in New York Methodist Hospital, Cornell Hospital. Did part of my rotation in Memorial Sloan Kettering. And was so inspired by
Cancer hospital in the world,
cancer care that I absolutely committed, despite my very upbeat personality. A lot of my friends thought I was going to go crazy being an oncologist. But I saw a bright future. I saw a lot of optimism, and I was right. Going into oncology and being trained for 6 years to become an oncologist was the best decision I ever made. So it's the field, it's the most amazing field of medicine with so many new developments. But I'm appreciative of all support that I've received over the years from my friends, and I'm so fortunate to have people like you invite me on your show because you have an amazing platform, and I'm so fortunate to be able to tell you my humble opinion on what's going on with my native country, Ukraine.
Well, first of all, to let everybody know, I know Simon very well. We play poker together, know his wife very well, been a house, and all. We just know each other a long time.
I do want to make a comment that I'm a much better physician than I am a poker player. I just want everybody to know.
Yes, he is. I got to say that because he comes to our poker game one time and he says, "You know, I'm a highly trained professional at this game." And I cleaned his clock.
Well, he's been cleaning my clock for a while because I thought I was trained to recognize a particular set of emotions. And I actually, at one point of my career, was very interested in psychiatry and psychology. But there's nothing. I look at Larry and his emotions are all over the place. I failed to read them. And I bluffed and I claimed that I can read his emotions based on all my experience. And I paid the price. So I will never again claim to have anything to do with my ability to read emotions or bluff or anything like this. I've learned my lesson.
Well, we're not going to be talking about poker. We really want to update my audience because I did get questions. It kind of pissed me off, too, to be honest. Obviously, there's conflicts around the world. We have Russia versus Ukraine. It's been going on for over a year.
2 years.
This
February, it would be 2 years. We started on February 24th, 2022.
Wow. Yep. And, you know, that's going on. Of course, Hamas and Israel are at war right now. And I have a lot of empathy for, the people, really. I have a big heart for all the people who suffer. Obviously, you do too on both sides. But I'm kind of pissed that you don't hear anything about a country that is bigger. I'm not going to say this in any way. I don't know how this is going to sound. I guess people are people, but more important resources-wise, Ukraine by far is probably more important. And here's why I say that. Because there's no doubt in my mind that if Russia took over Ukraine, they weren't stopping there.
Beautiful.
You
said it all. I was going to explain it, but you actually summarize it better than anybody could, and that surprises me. So you have a very deep understanding. Let me interrupt you for a second and say something. I'm equally disappointed because here we are for about a year and a half. Ukraine conflict makes a front page of every major website, newspaper, and such.
In the world,
everywhere in the world, including here in the United States. And I'm certainly the one who gets my information from multiple sources because I believe in it. I grew up in a country where there was two or three channels and they were heavily censored. So I value ability to get my information from multiple sources. But all of a sudden, and trust me, I am as emotionally, physically, and any way invested in a Middle East conflict because I'm actually going to tie two conflicts together. There's a connection here, and it all has to do and the hot places in the world from the sphere of influence point of view. Because let me explain to you. So definitely disappointing that nobody talks about the Ukraine. At the same time, the scale of conflict in Ukraine far exceeds anything that's going on in the Middle East right now. And of course, it's a terrible travesty to see people die. Palestinians, Israelis, I'm not biased. I'm trying to be as independent as possible, but there's no justification for the death of little infants and children. We all can agree to that.
But that's happened in Ukraine.
Well, let me just make some statements. So since the war started, and not a lot of people talk about it, about 8 million Ukrainians, predominantly children and women, left Ukraine. So completely about 8 million people were displaced outside of the Ukraine. Inside Ukraine, another 6 to 7 million people had to flee from the battle, from the areas which are close to the battlefield. So if you think about it, about 15 million people were displaced. And for what? Spheres of influence. When Russia,
how big is Ukraine? People
like? Ukraine is actually at the size of a France. As a matter of fact, it's a big, I think it's one of the biggest countries in Europe. Pre-war population approaching 65 to 70 million.
Say about Germany's population.
Germany about more than France. And actually huge country geographically.
But and you have natural resources. What are they?
Well, talking about the reasons for this war. Obviously, if you listen to anything that Russian propaganda and the state channels are stating, their reason for invading, Putin will tell you that he was provoked. He was provoked by this arrangements which was made long time ago between Soviet Union and NATO. When Soviet Union collapsed, apparently there was some kind of handshaking agreement where NATO, during one of those meetings, just said, we're going to try not to expand. We're going to respect your territory, you're going to respect ours. But in the end of the day, as soon as Soviet Union collapsed, remember, besides Soviet Union, there was a sphere of influence in the Eastern Europe. Countries like Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Bulgaria, Baltic countries that for about 50 years were living in constant fear of being invaded by Russia. So the second the opportunity presented, they requested NATO membership. NATO didn't force them. NATO, despite what the Russian propaganda will tell you, is a defensive alliance. But Putin beef with NATO, and one of the reasons why he claims he started this military campaign is a preventive strike, because he claims that the NATO has been expanding its borders closer and closer to Russia. And he partially has a point, because, for example, countries like Poland and Baltic countries, which were ravaged by communist Russia, the first opportunity that presented themselves, they didn't want to take a chance, rightfully so, because here we are 20 years later, and from what seems like a maybe an early birth of democracy in Russia in the early 90s, we're back to this pretty much dictatorial government. So you can't really blame for Eastern countries in Europe to want to get protection of the NATO, but that's one of the excuses. Another excuse, he claimed that Ukraine is being run by the Nazis. And that's the biggest bogus, because Ukraine just elected the first ever Jewish president.
Comedian, no less.
Comedian, you know. A
TV guy, actually, Ronald Reagan. You know, but I love him, to be honest.
Just happened to be a much better president than he is a comedian. But listen, the man is not poor. You know, before he ran for president, he declared his wealth. He's worth about $90 million. Yes, he is not. He is a very wealthy man. He made his money producing. He's a very good producer. His official worth, you know, he made his money, is about $90 million.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And what's incredible about him, talking about a right man being in the right place, anybody else, including the former Ukrainian president Poroshenko, probably would have fled the country at the beginning of the war. His famous words...
No, he's out in the streets.
Well, now he is. But trust me, there was multiple attempts to assassinate him.
Oh, Zelensky. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he, you know, he was offered the airplane tickets to get out of Ukraine, and he said, don't give me airplanes, give me weapons. And we'll talk about the weapons.
We're going to talk about that, because, you know, I remember when that happened, and I actually said, man, what's the odds? Take insurance out on this guy's life, and how much could you make?
But there's another reason, let me mention, why they wanted to take over Ukraine. So besides resources, Ukraine...
Now, what resources?
So So let's talk about it. Ukraine, if I'm not mistaken, has about 5 or 6 highly sophisticated nuclear power plant. The cost of each nuclear power plant, well-operating nuclear power plant, is in the range of $10 to $15 to $20 billion. So just by taking over Ukraine and controlling nuclear power, it's a tremendous amount of money. Grain. Ukraine traditionally has been supplying half of the world with the grain. As a matter of fact, the grain deal which Russia pulled out of resulted in some serious issues of delivering grain to developing countries in Africa, but Ukraine was able to come up with alternative routes of delivering grain. It's an incredibly prosperous country with a lot of minerals, tremendous amount of well-developed agriculture, and a very, very promising clean energy. Not to mention, just like Israel, you think of Israel in the Middle East. I want you to think of Ukraine as that lasting forever ally that United States is going to have. But whatever the pretense or reason for invading Ukraine, it was a BS because there's no Nazis in Ukraine. You know, you have Nazis freely walking in.
Okay, we all know that, yeah. I think. But why? If it's not that, what right. She says, what do you think? Was it the resources?
One more reason. So traditionally, the only way for the Tsar to stay in power in Russia, and you can take my word for it, or you can do your own historical research, you have to create the concept. You're familiar with the concept of the enemies at the gate. So it's a concept that was popularized by dictators a long time ago. When you oppress your own people, when you deplete them of all the natural resources that you steal and distribute among your cronies, how are you able to brainwash people? You basically, just like North Korean Kim Jong-un does it. For some reason, his people are convinced that he is their truly protector, that he is the only one who can stand up to the murderous Yankees. So the concept of enemy at the gate is created to brainwash your own people into believing that I'm a strong man, yes, I am a dictator, but if it wasn't for me, the Americans would step on you, they will take all your resources, they will enslave you. That's what the Russian propaganda is constantly. So, but the Putin is running increasingly weak and weak because, yes, a lot of Russian people are brainwashed, but there's a good people that are trying to come up with a form of opposition. So this war was one of the fundamental ways of him to be able to stay in power. The war, especially the victories in war, has always been traditionally rewarded. So any tsar, there's one thing that can never be forgiven to a Russian tsar. When you lose a war, you are done. So the problem with this is Putin is, as we call in poker, he is pot committed. Under no circumstances he can negotiate anything that will look like he lost that war, because the consequences inside the Russia for him would be absolutely...
That brings me to a point. Okay, I get that, and I do. It's about power. It's almost like America. Congress stays in power. People stay in power. It's all about the money or whatever it's about. And power, well, obviously, with Russia, it's different. How do you feel? Like, you're really a Russian... Ukraine, you must have relatives.
It's such a great question, and I'll tell you why.
It's got to be tough for you.
And let me tell you why I am a confused soul. So growing up in a part of Ukraine where most people spoke Ukrainian, my family actually spoke Russian.
So you speak both?
I speak both languages, but I consider Russian to be my first language. Not only that, I am perhaps more familiar with certain intricacies of Russian literature than I am Ukrainian literature, because Russian is my first language. Not only that, my firstborn son, who's going to turn 22, Robbie, you met him.
Not yet.
Until he turned 4, the only language he was spoken to and spoke back was Russian. So some of my former Facebook friends who accused me of being a Russophobe, you know, it's hard to accuse somebody who's made his firstborn son in America bilingual by teaching him a Russian language, which I think is a fantastic language, a Russophobe. But I've been accused of that because I've been very rough on a lot of my friends that live in Russia, and they got stuck in the moment with that propaganda where a lot of people just don't realize what the Putin is doing and how much pain and suffering he's inflicting on a peaceful country of Ukraine. Because in the end of the day, all Ukrainians want to do is just live their normal life, be a part of, build their own society, and just be able to choose their path. And they chose their path about 30 years ago when they voted to become 32 years ago.
And, you know, it's funny because, you know, I did a lot of research on Ukraine. They're a very happening metropolis. They have nightclubs and restaurants. And it reminds you of America a lot. A lot of it reminds, when you read about the clubs and nightlife and how kids go to school and the colleges, everything reminded you. It was like you're not looking at any kind of country of a Russia kind of type. You know, you're looking at a very democracy, a big-time democracy.
Well, do you know why there's a huge difference between Ukraine and Russia? A lot of it is geographical, and you have to understand, when you look at the geography of Russia, very small part of Russia belongs to Europe. Majority of it belongs to Asia. Yeah. And with the Asia, and I love my Asian brothers and sisters as much as I love anybody, but it's a completely different mentality. For example, when you look at the China, I don't know if it's right to call Xi a dictator, as we call him, and for one simple reason. He doesn't believe he is a dictator. He's grown up in a system where he believes he has a right to control a billion people, but he doesn't perceive that system as a righteously wrong, as a wrong system. For him, that's his way of democracy. That's why they push him back. So when you
talk... I got to push you in this too, because, listen, a part of America is socialist. We know that. So some of socialist things do work. Okay, a program where everybody puts in and gets delivered equally. Like a social
security, you can say a social security in a sense.
Medicine, certain parts of medicine are part of a social program, which they work. And a part of, sometimes I hate to say this, and I'm by no means supporting communism, but their system of government sometimes works because things get done. Right or wrong, you get the right guy in office, whatever you want to call it. But we can't get a thing done in America when you have a polarization
of
parties.
And they're absolutely laughing at us. And when you have a deadlock like this we have now in the parties, so instead of getting together and passing the laws, this is the music to Putin's ears. This is a way for him to basically point out how dysfunctional, quote-unquote, American democracy is. And he recently made a point, very interesting point, how people like Biden, people like Trump, people like Macron, people like who's running the Great Britain, I forgot now, they come and go. But he compared them to the kind of a seasonal flowers. Boris Johnson, where people like himself and she, they are perennial. So they are, he basically thinks of himself as a very influential man in the history who's been chosen by God to, and you know, he has a huge chip on his shoulder. Do you know?
Obviously.
Growing up without a father.
I know he was with the KGB and...
The funny story about him, and it's just well documented, he grew up without a father in a very poor family in St. Petersburg, a lot of insecurities, but he's always knew that by, conducting himself and being able to obtain certain information, he can get ahead in life. So the story of him knocking on the doors of KGB when he was 12 or 13 years old and asking for first assignment, they told him, come back in about 5 years, and his shoe came back. But he was a very, very...
ambitious and...
Capable agent. And what people don't know about him, he evolved. When he first became a president of Russia, he portrayed himself as actually quite a democratic person.
I remember that.
At one point, believe it or not...
After Yeltsin, wasn't it?
That's right. At one point, he was actually laughing about the fact that NATO offered Russia a membership. Believe it or not, there was discussion about... And trust me, it would have been the best thing ever. Because the only thing he has accomplished now... Did you know that Finland now became a part since he attacked Ukraine? Finland now applied and successfully obtained NATO status. So about 1,000 more kilometer of Russian border is now borders NATO. With the NATO. So one of the objective of his special operation, which is push the NATO back, every single objective he has failed. The problem is, instead of Operation Blitzkrieg, as Germans used to call it, quick victory, and taking Kiev and Ukraine within 3 days, this has become an amazingly prolonged conflict. But now, things have changed drastically.
But we're going to get into that, because this is what I want to get into.
Please.
Doesn't people in Russia, listen, technology, VPNs, and just to let everybody, anybody out there listening, you don't know what NATO, and NATO is a North American alliance, and what it means is attack one, you attack all. And it was made after World War II.
But in principle, it's a defensive alliance.
But, Absolutely. What it is it's made for little countries to have the backing of Malta. It's like a gang, if you want to call
that's
it.
Right. And one they can for protect all and
all for one.
All for one.
So that's just to let them know if anybody didn't know exactly what NATO is. Now, obviously, Simon, today's world with technology, I get how certain countries could keep their foot on people's necks. But there is so much technology out there. There's VPNs, there's young people, these young guys, they don't care about newspapers. They scour the internet, they scour the dark web, they scour everything. And, you know, they're very informed, a lot of the young people. I got to believe the young people and the people in Russia are informed.
And yes, there's a significant percentage of Russian population that is very well informed, but this is your choice. The government does enough to restrict the flow of information. So if you complicit, if you're not interested, if you believe what the TV, don't forget, the TV is like a Jesus Christ in Russia. Everybody is stuck. You can brainwash people through TV. So it becomes your personal choice or whatever you want to get that information. But don't forget, there was a massive exodus of the capable young Russians, because nobody wants to be drafted and go to war. Russia's greatest military victories through the history of Russia were on the field defending themselves. They are notoriously much better army when they are defending rather than attacking.
And I think most are. I mean, you know, when you're fighting for your own country, your land, whether it was us in World War II, even World War, you know, that was the big one. If we didn't win that war, we're speaking German. Yeah. That's why I think Ukraine is doing so well. I mean, they're fighting for their freedom. You can't give somebody freedom for 30 years and all of a sudden tell a guy who's 50 years old who remembers the communist era, he was 20 when it was changed, and now you're telling, like you or something, you're 40 years old or whatever you are.
No, I'm 52, thank you.
Are you 52 now? Wow, damn it. But my point is, you're 22 years old when they become free. You remember that era. Yeah. Now you remember this era. You say, whoa, you ain't taking this away from me.
And that's exactly why they will never give up that fight. And the only question is how many people will die in the process, because right now there's a fatigue. And I have to acknowledge the fact that there's a lot of fatigue in Europe and there's a lot of fatigue in America to support Ukraine, because this has been dragging on for 2 years. But we have to ask ourselves a question. Why is it dragging on for 2 years? And I'd love to answer that.
Well, we're going to answer, because I'm going to ask it this way. You said right away Putin can't lose or he's out.
No.
Does that bring nuclear weapons into play, number one? Number two, how do you win a war with somebody who can push a button and he's pushed up against the wall? That's two. And where do you see it, like, ending? I mean, there is no out. It's been he already looks like he's got mud on his face. Listen, I watched, and I'm old enough. I'm 62, and I remember, Simon, the war in 1992 with Kuwait and Iraq.
Operation
I'm watching
Desert
technology
Storm.
Where they put bombs into chimneys. That's 30 years ago. What do they have today?
So this is why there's a stalemate right now. This is why, because the level of technologies on both sides are basically canceling each other. Absolutely. And that's why the war is in a stalemate right now. But let me answer your question about the nuclear weapons. I believe that this is nothing more than a bluff. And actually, a lot of much smarter people than I am and political experts would say the same. You have to understand who Putin is. He is a killer. He is But there's a difference between being homicidal and being suicidal. He's got way too much to lose. He's got incredible amount of money.
Wealth, yes.
He's got much younger mistresses that he has apparently children with. It's just you never know about the parts of his family. It's a big taboo. It's not like in America we know what our president's daughters and sisters and brothers do. In Russia, you know, he has young mistresses. Everybody knows that. So this is not a man, in my opinion, is basically pushing nuclear bomb. There's no winning that war. You know, we're basically going to wipe out each other. There's also enough information to say that he was warned on the private channels that he can run his mouth about nuclear weapons. And if you notice, they're not doing it anymore.
I don't hear it anymore.
Yeah, because it was simply a bluff. And they realize it because people that run the Russia now are not ideological. They pretend to be ideological assholes. They're not. They are fucking businessmen, and they all have a shitload of money.
It's in America. America.
Yeah, but it's like basically the way Putin operates that country is like Tony Soprano. That's how he operates. He has his captains installed. Everybody reports back to him. If you're the part of that circle, you're good. If you're out of that circle of trust, you jump out of the balcony, and you know how it is.
Yeah, get poisoned in an airport wherever it is. Getting back to a way out. First of all, where does Ukraine see itself?
Sure.
I mean, obviously, Ukraine, they agreed, and I know this, people don't know this, Ukraine agreed with America not to take on nuclear weapons if America would help them in a case.
You're talking about 1994 when Ukraine gave up all this nuclear arsenal. So that's actually a big mistake on Ukraine part, but that should tell people how peaceful Ukrainians are and how we lack ambition of our Russian brothers and sisters of taking over the world. So Ukraine, after collapse of the Soviet Union, was left with the world's third largest supply of nuclear weapons because where I actually went to medical school, the Dnipropetrovsk used to be a closed city. There was a lot of secret factories that were making secret equipment. And still, one of the reasons, by the way, why Russia wants to take over Ukraine, because traditionally, before the Soviet Union collapsed, about 50% of a high-end military production was taking place in Ukraine. So with Ukraine going independent, there's still a very much functional factories that Ukraine is using right now. So not only they will get access to pretty cutting-edge equipment.
But was Ukraine a state? Was it like in the Soviet Union? Was Ukraine considered one of the states or provinces?
There was 15 states. Okay. You know, like 50 states. There was 15 states.
Gotcha.
Now, the only difference is they were all kept together by against their will.
Okay. I kind of think if someone said, well, what would you do if Texas said they're going to leave America? That's what they try to compare Ukraine to. Oh, we're leaving Russia. I said, wait a minute, you can't say that. The whole government of Russia collapsed. So that's like if the whole government of the United States collapsed, states can do what they want.
Ukraine has been an independent country since 1991. You just have to understand what's going on right now is a continuation of the plan. Putin used a weakness of Ukraine during the 2014 revolution to annex Crimea. And what a beautiful part of Ukraine it is. Then it wasn't enough for him. He started the war on the east part of Ukraine.
Was that about 2015?
2015. And that was kind of a frozen conflict. And by creating this frozen conflict and by backing those kind of independent shame republics, when they conducted basically under the gun, they were asking people to vote. So in those annexed territories, they conducted voting, which was basically put a gun to your head. You want to be a part of Russia, you want to be a part of Ukraine. You want to say you'll be a part of Ukraine, you get shot right there. And basically that's how those next territories now are considered to be a part of Russia. What Ukraine wants, I think what the end war, the end result is and the end goal here, they want a restoration of their land based and their borders based on 1991, based on the guarantees from United States, from Great Britain, from Germany, and from Russia, when they gave up third largest stockpile. Do you know why they did it? because the country was going through a severe economic crisis, and they were smart enough to realize that they don't have resources to maintain nuclear weapons, and all they wanted to do is people guarantee their territorial independence.
Out of the 15 states, that makes sense.
Who would fuck with them if they had nuclear weapons?
Nobody. It's like, why is North Korea? Well, we think they have nuclear weapons.
I don't
think
any other states had nukes. I think only Russia and Ukraine
okay,
had
but,
nukes.
Okay, out of the 15 states of Russia when it fell apart,
yeah,
89 or whatever that year was.
92.
How many of the states are independent now? Are they all in Russia and just Ukraine? Or
that's actually a great question. So initially, so dynamics are such, when initially Russia collapsed, all of them started developing a very independent way from Russia. But as the Putin came to power about 20 years ago, his whole policy was to bring back the borders of former Soviet Union. He always said that the collapse of a Soviet Union, and I'm quoting you, is the biggest geopolitical disaster of the 20th century. So he sees himself as a righteous tsar whose job is to bring back the original borders of Soviet Union. That's the end game. So how did he did it? He did it with Belarus. For example, there's a dictator there, Lukashenko, and he basically, now they have almost like a one country. There's no division, you know, it's one economy. So they have a way of controlling economically. They have a way of controlling former 15 republics by instigating a conflict. So they will do whatever they can. But in the end of the day, it's a war for the spheres of influence. And Putin strongly believes, for some reason, that unless he redraws the borders to the former Soviet Union, you know, that's unacceptable. So he basically blames NATO. He blames United States of America for taking advantage of the Russia collapse, missing to realize that fundamentally Russia was a deeply flawed state that could not go on the way they were.
Right. Obviously, I mean, they got a lot of help when they collapsed, in fact. But is the money the same in Russia as is Ukraine? Same kind of money? And is it the value system? Or does Ukraine have its own currency?
Ukraine has its own currency for the last three decades.
Okay, does again, how many countries, how many states out of the 15 are not part of the Soviet Union?
So technically, they are all independent right now, technically. Belarus, if you look at the connection between Russia and Belarus, I would make a point that's one country now. Because during the war against Ukraine, Russian troops used Belarus territory to invade
Crimea,
Ukraine.
Too. Didn't they take over, like, a long time? I mean, in 15, they took over Crimea, and everybody let it go. I mean, that's how I remember. I mean, I do remember that.
Well, it all
started. But isn't it the people that have to fight that?
How do you fight that?
You fight the way. Listen, I believe, and only what I believe, because I know how I am. Listen, America's not perfect, but I love this country. And if anybody came to take it away and make me do another way of life, it's not happening. I don't care if I die.
Right.
And I believe the Ukrainian people are like that, and that's why they're fighting. Listen, when you're fighting for your freedom, it's a lot. Listen, going to Afghanistan, which Russia couldn't do, the United States couldn't do, and take it. You're fighting for not ideology shit. You're not fighting for your freedom. You're going in and trying to make our way of life theirs, which is wrong, in my opinion.
Right.
Every war the United States was in, from Vietnam to Korea to, I can't even, Grenada, all these things, these conflicts, call them wars, were not for what?
Not for this. Not for the righteous reasons.
No. Ukraine is fighting for their freedom.
It was a geopolitical. It's for geopolitical sphere of influence. That's it. We were fighting commies, and we better fight them over there than fight them here.
Israelis the same way now. They're fighting for their freedom. If they let them come and keep bombing their country, they have no country.
By the way, did you know that Hamas recently was greeted very warmly in Russia?
I did.
Putin openly expressed his support. They are such an anti-Semitic state, I'm telling you. And it's just, it's
incredible. Really believe this, Simon, that you know, I do believe Soviet Union or Putin had something to do with this Hamas thing, because literally what happened. It pissed me off. It took it out of the news.
By supporting Iran. Oh, yeah, that was the best thing that ever happened to him. They are so happy that now it's not circulating on the front pages. Oh, my God, it's the best thing that ever happened.
Because, one, he looked like an asshole in the beginning when literally the Ukrainian army was kicking ass and taking names. I mean, I'm watching this on TV saying, don't mess with these Ukrainians. I mean, they got heart.
But do you know why it changed? Let's talk about this for just a quick second. So a lot was expected of Ukrainian counteroffensive. And let me tell you why it didn't materialize as well as it should. So in the first stages of the war, where Russia implemented this kind of a blitzkrieg strategy and tried to overwhelm Ukrainians, they were smart enough to fight back in a very organized way. And they inflicted incredible losses. The amount of losses they inflicted, basically Russia, in the first couple of months of war, Russia's special forces, not as stupid recruits that or convicts. Did you know they're recruiting convicts from prison?
Yes, I did.
And we'll talk about it. But they've lost, Ukraine decimated 50% of their highly trained special forces. Gone. Because they were trying to overwhelm. So then they pulled back. But once they pulled back, they took a significant part of territory. It took Ukraine about 6 to 8 months to grind them, to stop that machine. By the time they stopped, they were ready to kick ass. We had no weapons. It took them to about a year to get the proper weapons to go on a counteroffensive. Guess what Russia did in this year? And they traditionally much better being on defense than going on offense. They dug incredible three lines of defense like nothing you've ever seen. You got to give those bastards a credit. When it comes to defending something, they are very creative. So do you know what dragon teeth are? They put this huge metal dragon teeth. They put number of mines in the field now. NATO said the concentration of mines like they've never seen in any conflict. And they have a tremendous superiority in the air because we still don't have the F-16s. So how do you go and break those multiple fortified lines of defense with snipers, with mines, with dragon teeth, when you don't even have a proper air support? And they actually kicking ass to the best of their ability, but they need more weapons. And
now, how can they, like, again, I'm going to go to this question I asked you one other time we were on. And I'm all for Ukraine. I'm also all for the United States to stop paying for all these wars around the country. When I read, United States just authorized another $5 billion, $10 billion, we're not talking little chump change.
Nope.
And don't get me wrong, there's only so much you can give before you say, wait a minute, who's next? Or who's next? Is it Poland? Is it this? I mean, and I think the American people are fed up. Can you explain how to the American people, or my audience,
sure,
Ukraine is paying it back, and they could do it under a way of a program we talked about earlier called
Lend-Lease.
Lend-Lease. Can you explain
sure.
that?
Sure. So the Lend-Lease is actually...
First of all, are you paying it back?
Well, I sure hope so.
Okay.
And I think they will, and I think there's...
I mean, they have the resources.
Let me tell you something. If Ukraine wants to be a part of the NATO, and they are asking to be a part of the NATO, they fully realize that they have to implement a particular reforms to root out a lot of things which is a leftover of the Soviet Union, because corruption that is still unfortunately rooted in some of the Ukrainian society is something that was deeply rooted in a former Soviet Union mentality, because we always had a deficiency of something, and the only way to make a deal is to know somebody that knows somebody. It was a deeply corrupt country where the only way to get ahead is to do shady things. Why do you think the Russian gangsters, I know I'm...
No, good. I would have probably been good there.
Why do you think Russian gangsters were so successful when they hit New York in the 80s? Because the schemes that they were really able to pull, you know, FBI, I've never seen anything like it. I always compare living in former Soviet Union as what's that little game when you go to carnivals when you hit the mall. The little mole appears and whack the mole. So that's how it...
Whack a mole.
Whack a mole is how it felt growing up at Soviet Union. The second you do something, the government just whacks you. So when the people cancel on the pressure like this, they get very creative. So to answer your question, why do you invest in Ukraine? Let's take a look at the history of the United States. And let's take a look at You know, what do you think would have happened during a World War II if we didn't join the forces with Brits, with Soviet Union against the Nazis? This is now a biggest conflict in Europe since a World War II. And it's not just about Ukraine, because as I told you before, Putin's plans are much bigger. As a matter of fact...
Oh, he would have kept going.
Absolutely. If it wasn't for Ukrainians that slow him down, he had much bigger plans. They already talk about
Poland,
Baltics, Georgia, because he's got nothing to lose. He's got all the money in the world. Right now, he's just trying to build up his reputation. So I know we're paying a lot of money, but first of all, most of the equipment that will be sent to Ukraine will be sent on a program known as Land Lease. And this program actually gives a country many years to pay it back, as former Soviet Union was paying for over five decades to United States. People need to look it up, but...
And they paid it.
And they paid it to the last dime. Now, it was a little bit adventurous. Initially, Stalin, the former dictator, refused to pay it, but subsequently, after he died, he basically said, you know what, we're not going to pay a dime, we defeated Nazis. But in the end, they did pay. But Land Lease is a program that will allow Ukrainians to obtain weapons they so desperately need. Not only that, whatever money you will invest in Ukraine will be recouped 10 times, 100 times, because Ukraine represents a very unique country in the middle of the Europe with tremendous resources. And I want people to think of Ukraine as people think of Israel in the Middle East. You have a tremendously bright, ambitious country who shares your values and cherishes the values of freedom and independence, and willing to fight and die for those values.
Is it geographically located? Like, the United States is very, on the hemispheres and on the latitude, longitude lines, a perfect country, the United States. It's got two oceans, it's got mountains, it's got great, we can grow, we have oil. Is Ukraine on the same geographical line, so to speak,
as the United States? Comparing to where it would be in the United States?
Like, my point would be, is it strategically located enough? Like, would you really help Madagascar? I mean, what's that going to do?
What a great question. You know? So when you look at the history of Ukraine, one of the reasons it's been a bloodied land throughout the centuries is because how strategically important it has been. And do you know why Ukrainian women are so stunning and so beautiful? Because throughout the centuries, we conquered and we've been conquered. You know, there was...
And the bloodlines.
And the bloodlines. Yeah. There was so much bloodlines.
I'm sure the Nord,
but from a strategic... And there's something else you need to understand. Russia has always viewed Ukraine as this kind of a buffer zone against the NATO, and always treated it as a little cousin and abused it as much as they could. And fundamentally, Mr. Putin doesn't believe, if we talk about the right of country to exist, he doesn't believe in a right of Ukraine to exist. And how do you tell it to the people that were born in freedom 30 years ago,
100%.
And didn't know anything else? So the reason to help Ukraine is because I would argue our finest moments as United States of America came when we reached out to those in needs and provided support in the darkest times. And I know that Ukrainians will be forever grateful for support, and will not only pay it back, but... How much benefit do you think, both economically, monetarily, United States obtained after the collapse of Soviet Union? Do you think we benefited from that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
so if you give Ukraine, if they would have given Ukraine a year ago the weapons they have now, this war would have been over. And when the war would get over, Putin would pay the ultimate price. His people will overthrow him, because the one thing he will never be forgiven for is losing the war. Tsar can do anything.
That boggles my mind, and I get what you're saying, because as a kind of level-headed guy, I think I am, you got to look for a way out, so to speak. I said the money issue, and I didn't mean that to listen, I believe in helping people, period. I do it to this day. I don't care who they are. But when we went into Kuwait, to kick out Saddam Hussein. Why we did not take the oil until they paid it back. I don't want making money.
Well, George W. Bush, that's how we said we're going to pay for it with the Iraqi oil.
But you can't. And we didn't.
Yeah.
So my point is, Ukraine is a very rich country, and I know not only grain,
resources of gas,
iron.
Oh my God!
There's a lot of natural resources. There has to be some. I mean, whether it's Zelensky or the parliaments or however they work, and say, listen, we need your help. We need your weapons. We need your stuff. Here's how we're going to do it. You're going to get 10% of the, until it's paid. I think people would feel better.
Even now, there's already plans in place of how to build up Ukraine economy. And what you have to understand that it's going to be a country where major brands would be happy to invest in, because it's even before the invasion of Russia, it was quickly emerging economy. Now, you said about, I have friends that traveled to Ukraine before the war started, going to nightclubs, and they said it was like a Paris, only much cheaper. It was a beautiful, developing European countries that were marching towards independence and prosperity, and everything was taken away by a maniac who wants to redraw the borders, and that's unfortunate.
And you know what you said is so right, Simon, because I believe if Russia, Ukraine came out and said, this is what we're going to do. When this happens, our economy goes, you're going to get this. It kind of puts me as an investor. Wait a minute. I ain't letting them lose. I want my money back. Yeah. And if they go under, I can't get my money back because you're not getting it from Russia.
Let me just tell you one huge...
You get where I'm going there.
Let me tell you one huge difference between investing in Iraq and investing in Ukraine. And I love my Iraqi brothers and sisters, but they were not ready for democracy. I'm sorry. They did not care about our democracy that I wanted to install on them.
I don't know if they still are.
Yeah, they were living in a few hundred years behind. No disrespect. Ukraine, democracy is there. Democracy is there in Ukraine. It needs to be cherished. It needs to be protected. And that's going to be an oasis of democracy. And more importantly, I want you to think of this as an eternal battle between good and evil. And if you let Putin win this one sphere of influence, the domino effect and the consequences, and ultimately the price that United States will pay for allowing him to get away with this is going to be a lot more than the money Ukraine is asking for now.
Simon, first of all, there's no way, first of all, you can win if you don't win the people over, period. I mean, they're not going to be a North Korea. You cannot win the people, so you're never going to win a war. I mean, it could be guerrilla war forever. It could be a lot of things like Afghanistan. You can't win a war when the people, you can't win the people over, period. That's number one. Number two is, when I look at the Soviet Union and I, look at what they tried to do and how they could never hold it. I used to do a lot of re-watching. That's why I wanted this show, because nobody knows what's going on. You still never gave me how... Not just weapons. How does... Obviously, Putin's not going to want to leave this thing no matter what, because he's out of office. He's demoralized. Whatever it is, he is. How do we win him? How does he get out of this thing with either saving face or...
That's a great point.
Why hasn't he been assassinated?
Well, I think he is a former KGB agent, and if one thing, there was a couple of attempts to assassinate him, but he's very clever. He's got his own train system, secret train system that he travels. He's got multiple
insiders.
Yeah,
but you know what a $1 billion does? You give me $1 billion, I go over there.
History told us anything, that we can kill anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
but
a fact.
He's a tough one, and I tell you, it would relieve a lot of issues. I truly believe that the war can stop. If Putin is a dead man, if he dies for whatever reason, may he live not so much longer.
The war ends.
War ends. Because majority of people in Russia at power understand that their financial interests are being harmed. A lot of oligarchs, and that's, by the way, why do we sanction oligarchs? Because the hope is when you squeeze the oligarchs, you squeeze the money, they will somehow revolt against him. But he's got such a stronghold because he's Tony Soprano, basically. And a lot of people, a lot of very wealthy Russians that would love to do business in Europe are struggling right now because they are guilty by association. Their super yachts, luxury yachts, are being confiscated. That's how we send that message. But how do you save the face? So there's a couple of ways to save the face. Putin would love to negotiate something. If he can negotiate some form of a temporarily cease, it would be an ideal situation because it will give him a chance to regroup. Ukraine doesn't want that because they view this as their last opportunity to get back their land. They don't want an inch of Russian territory. All they want is the land which was taken back from them after, go back to the borders of 1991 when they became independent country, when they give up their nuclear arsenal, when they were guaranteed their territorial integrity. Now, we need weapons. Now, people say, Russians say, well, Americans are sending weapons. All the weapons, especially artillery, that United States is sending to us is on one condition. Ukraine is not permitted to target anything on the Russian territory with the very, very rare exceptions. Ukraine is not allowed to fire into Russian territory. So even the weapons that are being given to us are being given on very heavy preconditions. But the number one reasons why they struggle...
That's not right, because it's like you're tying one of their arms behind their back in a fight.
But we need F-15, F-16. We need airplanes. We need airplanes. Without air superiority, this war is going to drag. We can potentially finish the war within 6 months.
With the proper
equipment.
Now, what does ending look like? You killing Putin?
No, basically, we run them out of Ukraine.
And you think Putin's just going to quit?
At that point, you restore your territorial integrity and you apply for NATO membership. Once you are part of NATO, he's not going
to
fuck
with you. I know, but I don't think NATO wants to start that thing. And matter of fact, if I remember correctly, you're not allowed to enter NATO under conflict.
As a matter of fact, that's how the Putin prevented most of the former states of Soviet Union. For example, Georgia, a state on the south of Soviet Union, was the first state that expressed interest in joining NATO. And the first conflict was invasion of Georgia in 2008, where he got away with a slap on his hand. And then he did it in 2014, annexing Crimea. But it's the same formula. He did it in Moldova. He did it in Georgia. He did it in Ukraine. You invade on the pretense of protecting ethnic-speaking Russians. You know, that's another bullshit. Yeah. He invaded because the Russian-speaking people like myself and most of my friends... They need help. You know, we were being persecuted and not allowed to speak Russian. My whole life I spoke Russian in Ukraine, and most of my friends, Russian is their first language. But, you know...
It's got to feel really rough for a Ukrainian army to kill... Essence could be brothers, could be blood relatives, could be a lot of things on you. And you know, I read this, and it really will touch you. It says, old men start wars, young men die for them. And that is what's wrong with this thing. You got young people have no idea why they're at war.
There's a big difference who's dying on both sides, and let me clarify it. On the Ukrainian sides is the finest of the finest. On the Russian sides, I'm not saying former convict are not people. They are people. They are human. But people that fighting for the Russia are convicts that were promised. So basically, you know, they recruit convicts regardless. Murderers, rapists, it doesn't matter. If you serve for 6 months, clean slate. Basically, everything gets wiped out. Now, fortunately, most of them don't survive 6 months because they've been used like a cannon meat.
Right. They're the frontline guy that's running into a...
Absolutely. But those that survive, there's already stories of them getting their papers back, going back to their communities and terrorizing people. You know it. You told me the stories how you met some people in jail that don't belong there. It was and you met some people that, God forbid... They would ever be outside of jail.
I talk about that all the time. There's a percentage of people I never want to see live next to anybody. Because if they do, they're going to kill them. They're going to do something. They're going to have a bad day. And it's going to be over. And that's just I guess the facts of
so
how
there's
life
a huge goes. There's a huge difference between who's dying on Ukrainian side, and I just want people to understand that Ukrainians will not stop fighting, even if United States will stop sending weapons. They will fight until the last drop. It's just the number of people that will die.
I agree. There's no way you could take over people. Just you can't do it, you know. And I look at you. I look at the people of this war, and I look at Ukraine. I look at Russia, and I think Russia's not fighting for the right reasons. I think they know it.
That's why they're going to lose.
Well, I think their military knows it. I mean, I did read about abandonments and people leaving their tanks and literally young people hearing on the internet, and because they're smart now. They have VPNs and
did
stuff.
Did you know that
and
they...
literally getting out of tanks and leaving and defecting to Ukraine.
Defecting sometimes. Well, there was one guy, he made a nice living. He basically defected on an airplane. Defected on an airplane, got a shitload of money and Ukrainian citizenship. Ukraine is constantly offering Russian soldiers that don't want to fight surrender. We guarantee, and they treat them like humans. When you look at the prisoners of wars, how they're being kept and how being treated in Ukraine, because Ukraine is...
Well, it's the Geneva Convention.
It's a European country where in Russia, it's... I don't know. I just,
yeah. Well, no, you do know. And here's my... I mean, looking at the bottle, I got myself pissed off because I didn't hear anything what's going on. Let's give your prediction. Do you still hear from people in Ukraine and Russia?
So today I spoke with a friend of mine who I went to medical school to. He is 52 years old and he was just drafted. Now he's a doctor.
Whoa, 52 years old, he's drafted?
He's drafted.
From Ukraine?
From Ukraine, yeah. He lives in Ukraine, yeah. So I actually...
Is he okay with that? I hope so.
Yeah,
man.
He's in good shape.
Hey, listen, it's not even that. I'm fighting for my country.
He's a physician. I don't know what he's going to do. But besides that, my wife has relatives. I am on the phone every single week. Now, we sent money. We sent clothes.
Supplies.
We sent just yesterday, Lily and I, we were buying a shitload of tourniquets on Amazon. There's actually a couple of organizations here in Brevard.
Wait a minute. Stop. Stop the presses.
All right, sorry.
Amazon delivers to Ukraine?
No.
Jeff Bezos is in Ukraine.
Not right now.
Okay,
but no.
You said you're on Amazon.
I buy things on Amazon and they get delivered to people that then send it to Ukraine.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. Okay. But trust me,
as soon as war will end, Bezos will be there.
Oh, I'll bet he will. No, that's good. And I know you did that. I remember in the beginning, and I think that's great.
It's the least I can do. I'm very fortunate.
Yes. Does anything in your heart say that you want to go back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as a matter of fact,
to help, to fight, to whatever.
I want to go back so badly, and I just...
You're probably better here, and you can help more here.
Yeah, but I can't imagine. It's still, as much as I worry and as much as it pains me, I cannot imagine people that live in fear of being bombarded. Imagine sirens going off and having to run to the shelter multiple times. And unfortunately, what the Russian army is doing right now is because they failed to defeat Ukrainian army, they are resorting to tactics of terrorizing civil population because they don't target, they can't do anything with the military. They can't defeat the military. So they're bombing civilians. Apartment buildings. And obviously, they're destroying all the infrastructure that has to do with energy infrastructure, hoping that Ukraine is going to freeze to death. With one intention that people are going to say, we can't take it anymore, please. They just basically hoping that Ukrainians will get on their knees and ask for forgiveness.
And it's not going to happen. So, I'm sure that you're torn in that regard. And I know your wife, too. I'm sure you have conversation. And like you said, you know people there. Do you know any Russians?
Oh, my God, yes.
Have you spoke to any Russian people?
And... Yes, and some of those conversations were very, very disappointing, unfortunately. I actually have lost some people. I've lost some friends that grew up in Ukraine by the circumstances, end up moving to Russia and staying in Russia and becoming Russian citizenship. What I don't understand is why do my Russian brothers and sisters, not all of them, feel so entitled of taking over the world. It's the difference between Ukrainians. Ukrainians don't have the ambitions of taking over the world, so the Russians have this ambitions and this chosen attitude about themselves. You know, they believe that they are God chosen people, and it's their destiny to take over the world.
It's the and you know these people.
It's an imperialistic view. So my friends that I used to be very close with, I sense that. I sense that that Russian pride, that desire of taking over the world. I think they basically, what they have is what Putin has. They have a chip on their shoulder. It's a
have they been brainwashed?
100%. And yeah. Those are smart people. Some of them are doctors. And that just tells you how incredible Russian propaganda is, that even a highly intelligent people can put it into that pseudo-patriotism. Because there's a difference.
You have that right here in America. We know that.
Yeah.
You know, we have the nut jobs that, that go crazy. I mean, you know, I can go into that. I mean, of course. A couple more questions. That's it. Is Soviet Union or is Ukraine working on psychops, meaning I remember during World War II, all dropping leaflets, doing things, trying it, especially with technology today. Right. I did read where some major hackers were doing things to Russia to get things out there, like stopping their systems. I mean, let's face it, you can get the hackers today to do anything. I mean,
Russia has amazing hackers. Well, you know, always had.
Every
always
country had. Does, I'm sure. I mean, the big ones anyway.
Yeah.
Is Ukraine either getting pamphlets? Is they getting? Is anybody trying those things? Because those are the things I think that brainwash people. And I also think things they could also. I'm a believer, and I do this all the time, Simon. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a libertarian. As what I do is I read multiple. I could watch Fox. I could watch MSNBC. Or I could go to different political sites and get the collective. Filter out the bullshit that I think is bullshit, and then make an educated opinion. Are they doing that there?
Here's the problem. I'm going to use a pretty nasty terminology, but I truly, truly, truly believe in the last couple of years, Russia is becoming this almost a fascist state. And it's not only, even if you know the truth, there are consequences for speaking the truth. People now...
Are people that scared, you think, that?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And as a matter of fact, a couple of my friends that I grew up in Ukraine, every time I try to engage them into this conversation, you can sense how uncomfortable they become. They would say something like, I support my country, I support my leader.
Case it's bugged, maybe, they're thinking.
You have to understand, in Soviet Union, if you don't support your government, you're not a patriot unless you support your government. That's the difference. I may disagree with my government here, and I could still be a patriot. You're not.
Sure, I am.
You're a foreign agent. If you don't support agenda of your government by 100%, you're a foreign agent. And repercussions are you're going to lose your work. You're going to lose your friends. You're going to lose your career. You can be jailed. You know, you can be poisoned. You can just jump out of the... balcony, you can just have a heart attack.
Well, you can read about, you know, stuff with
you can have a heart attack at the age of 40 despite being in perfect shape. You know, it's
last question, this important one, unless you have something I want you to add. No. Where do you think other countries are standing besides the United States? If you know, let's call it the Arab countries, let's call it the Middle East, let's call it the South America, a very big market now. Obviously, China, India. Is probably the biggest democratic society.
It is by
1.4 billion people. By far. Same as China, 1.4 billion people.
Just took over China as a total number of people.
Yeah, they did. And they're the biggest probably economy in the world right now. I don't know. We are still because of money
consumer.
And of
wealth. We have a number one consumer economy. We're still able to spend more money than anybody else.
Absolutely.
But as far as producing China's...
Oh, is unbelievable.
They're making more.
What do you hear, if anything, these other countries... Because they don't want this. This is the biggest disruption.
Oh, my God.
Germany with oil, with... I mean, there's so many, again, variables that I can't get into every one of them. What are you hearing?
So countries are adjusting. First of all, one of the biggest changes that happened in Europe is... And this is where Russia lost billions and billions of dollars. So basically, the Europe is now, instead of being 100% dependent on Russian gas, is about 90% independent. They completely cut out Russian oil.
I remember that big pipeline that they made. Right.
Obviously, China reacted to that by making an ultra-profitable deal with Russia because Russia had to sell that extra oil and gas, so China got a great deal. So countries are adjusting. But in the end of the day, this conflict is very bad for majority of people. The only people that benefit from it is people like Iran, because you have to understand, and I'm just going to run the last parallel. Russia supports Iran. Iran supports Hamas. So what's going on in Ukraine is very much connected to what's going on in Middle East. So if you give Ukraine enough support and enough weapons, they will win this war, which will result in collapse of Russia or weakening Russia influence. You have to understand, if we pull out of Ukraine right now, it will create a vacuum. Russia will take over, and then we'll lose a huge sphere of influence. The same is in the Middle East. So I want you to look at the Ukraine as both real people that needs to be saved and dying, but also tremendous investment into the future.
Geopolitics. I agree with that 100%. And it's sad that it's not just, you know, you can't live on, listen, you got countries out there that still beat women. I'm not going to get into a lot of how that works, because you can't police the world, I always say.
But if we defeat the Russia, we defeat Iran, and if we defeat Iran, we defeat Hamas.
It's not just, and
maybe
that
would be
a
peace in the Middle East.
I don't know. Yeah. Listen, religion has messed up everything in the Middle East.
In the name of God.
Sunni, Shia.
In the name of God.
You know.
Used to say? Kill them all, let the God decide who's good, who's not.
One more. How long has Russia been, like the United States has been in existence for 230-something years. How long is Russia?
Over 1,000 years.
Is it 1,000?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they are ripe to fall. And I'll tell you why. I did a lot of research on this. Most societies, the Romans, the Huns, the Vikings, 500, 700 years, internal strife, other things. Yeah. Gone.
Any great empire peaked, declined, and eventually collapsed.
And
I just hope America sticks around.
Well, I do too, but look what's going on. I mean, you got to get a little worried.
Yeah. We're on decline. But I think in principle, we have the system that works for little guy.
I thought that with Russia, with Greeks. I can go on and on, but I read a lot about that.
Russia will collapse. And basically, they are shooting themselves in last thing I'm going to say. Do you know why Russia collapsed in the 90s? Because of the Cold War. Because
Reagan collapsed them money-wise.
You know what they did? They made a mistake. They wanted to keep up with Americans in the Cold War, except America at that point was spending, 20% of GDP? And Russia was spending close to 80%. So the second...
Well, we had a crazy cowboy as a president.
Yeah, but it was unique. So the Russia's going to shoot themselves in a foot and collapse.
Well, do you think it's the economy? Is the Russian economy shitty right now?
It's not just shitty. It's just so limited, because all they're able to do is sell their natural resources. They don't produce anything. They're incredibly limited by what they can do. But they're also very hard to squeeze, because the population is so poor. When you take more from them, it's like they never have anything to begin with. When you take away something from American, he's going to take on the street to protest. The Russians are so poor, they're going to take...
I don't have gas for my car? I'm protesting.
Oh, you don't have gas? Listen, there's still countries, there's still huge cities and smaller cities in Russia that don't have a basic gas, where they still go party outside. You know,
I often tell people we don't know how lucky we have it here in the United States.
Yeah.
But on that note, I also think that I'm a believer in doing this, what we do, because I like that land lease. Listen, as long as they pay it back somehow, obviously they're paying it back by being a political ally and a geopolitical, where you could put maybe a base there. You could do something like that. Listen, you take the, if we got them and we want to put a military base there just for protection.
Absolutely. Hey, well, let me ask you a last question. Why do we have to treat, and I love the state of Israel and I'm very emotionally committed. I have friends, I have relatives living there.
I'm with you.
Why do we treat state of different, their interests different from Ukraine? I'm telling you.
We shouldn't.
You know, that's why we need to.
In fact, we should treat Ukraine, I think, is more important. I hate to say anything.
Just as important.
At least.
Yeah.
And I'm not against Israel by no stretch. I hate what's going on. But they've been in existence since 1948. Ukraine has been with that general sphere for 1,000 years.
Well, the Kiev is 200 years older than Moscow. The Russia started with the Kiev. It was Kiev's Rus'. was the original Kiev. Kiev was the capital.
So, and that's why I wanted you on to open and my audience eyes. What's going on?
We are so much alike. There's no difference between Russians and Ukrainians. It's really is a making of one maniac and couple of enablers. As simple as that.
With that,
and a bunch of complicit people.
Anything else you want to book? Because I have one more question after that, and then anything else.
I want to thank you for providing me with this platform, and I sincerely hope when I talk to you next time, this terrible war will be over, and Ukraine
and we can talk
will
about
be on the way to recovery.
I hope so too. But I have the last question: where do you and where can I tell my audience to go? Obviously, you talk to people. You have friends in Ukraine. You have friends in Russia. You have friends, so you're on a phone. Where can I tell my audience to get some news? Because you're not getting it from main news, and it's pissing me off. It really is pissing me off. Nothing against Israel, like you said.
Right.
But listen, this is still important. Zelensky, I love him. I mean, I love the fight in him. He didn't leave the country.
Despite multiple assassination attempts.
Oh, I love the guy. I really do. No. And
well, listen, you can still read about Ukraine. You just, when you go to those major websites, instead of that being on the front page, second page, you have to Google it now. You have to go into the search, and everything pops up. But it's incredible how dismissive mainstream.
But again, you got to be careful. Obviously, that's part of war. And that's propaganda. You get the wrong websites. You can get the wrong stuff and start reading the wrong information. And obviously, you got to read both. I do.
Yeah.
How does somebody, do they say, okay, I'm going to take a Fox and CNN? I don't know.
I watch a lot of YouTube channels just like, listen, there's a lot of political commentators that actually have tremendous multi-million subscribers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big reach. YouTube's the biggest platform in the world. You know,
it's incredible because
do they have in Ukraine?
Oh, my God. I am stuck to the screen sometimes for hours digesting all that information.
Hope it's with my content, too.
Oh, I know all about your content. You know, I've learned so much.
You know because we hang out when you drink. But
Larry, thank you. Know
you. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, I really want to appreciate it. Hey, everybody, I just want to thank Simon Vinarski and for your expertise on this. And you are an expert. An expert means someone who knows a lot more than others. And you do. Please check out my sponsors. Oliva Cigar. Thank you. The books. Mybookie.ag. Check them out. Please use promo code Lawton and get that 50% match. With that said, have a great week. Have a happy, happy Thanksgiving. And you know what? Just care about somebody today. Have a great day, everybody.
It's definitely something you should hear.
This is The Real Deal with Larry Lawton.